This show is a repeat program.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Green Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Green Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth.
Kia ora and welcome. I'm Lisa Eyre and this is Green Planet FM. Today I will be speaking to Philip J. Watt, who is an activist for individual and collective change. His love for spreading empowering messages has evolved into being a leading writer for independent media dedicated to mindful, holistic and progressive living. He lives in Bellingen, New South Wales, Australia. Phil has over a decade experience serving community services sector, both government and non-government, in which he worked with a diverse range of clients and businesses. This includes extensive therapeutic and developmental services for adults and children with special interest in relationship mediation and mentoring young adults. Throughout his career, he has successfully fulfilled a myriad of roles, including life guidance, relationship mediation, journalism, youth and social work, policy development, project management, and security services. I first heard about Phil when I read an article of his called Redesigning Society, which impressed me a great deal. Welcome, Phil. I noticed one of the articles on your website was called The Awakening of Our Society is Just as Important as the Awakening of Ourself. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, hello, Lisa. Thanks for inviting me on. Sure. So what I've noticed within the, I guess, the Truth or Freedom Network, which many might call this sort of a new age movement or a spiritual movement as well, is that there's been a general meme of working on the internal realm. Now, that is obviously a huge key in the expansion of individual and collective energy and consciousness. But it's also a little bit misplaced. And I think one of the quotes by Rumi is sort of misled people where he said something like, first I was clever and I wanted to change the world, now I'm wise and I want to change myself.
I know that quote.
I think there's an extension to that. I think not only are we clever for wanting to change the world and wise for wanting to change ourselves, we're both clever and wise for wanting to change ourselves and the world. So I think it's very key to have a holistic approach to dealing with both the control element of what's going on the inside as well as on the outside. So as much as it is important to explore the inner realm and do the healing and the growth work that is necessary for our own healing and growth, it's also important that we look at what's going on in the outside world and have a fair judgment, a realistic judgment on what is going on and respond accordingly. And that includes responding to the elements of the system that require change and the elements of, how the people are organising to respond to a very toxic and sick world, which we unfortunately have today.
Well, yes, I totally agree with you, because how can you be a compassionate person and ignore some of the things that are going on with the world and just say, well, you know, politics is horrible? So I totally like the approach that we have to change ourselves and what's going on outside.
There's no doubt that working on our own frequency, our own instrument of sound, and how that influences and impacts the external energetic grid, that really does have amazing effect. If we raise our own vibration, our own consciousness, that is no doubt having a similar impact on the construct that we're completely interconnected and interdependent with. But as important it is to look at what we need to do on an internal level, and if we all did that, well, then the world would be changed pretty bloody quickly, wouldn't it? But the reality is that's not what's happening. We have to deal realistically with where we are. And just because we've developed and healed ourselves to a certain degree, and as a quick side note, we never come to a plateau. There is no end. There is no waking up. It's just a journey of becoming more conscious of what's going on in the world. And yes, that raising of awareness snowballs and becomes even greater, and amplifies and sort of reinforces itself and becomes more, it's like refining what we're doing. We're refining our truths, refining our inner processing and our emotional processing and the way that we, behave. But there is no end in sight. There's no place where we go, right, that's it, I'm awake and no more help and growth for me. That doesn't happen, and I think if we take that approach, maybe we need to go back down the bottom of the mountain and start again working towards the peak of whatever concept is important to us in that time. So, yes, it is really, really important for us all to work on ourselves, but at the end of the day, not everybody is doing that. There needs to be an influence or an injection of our own energy through behaviours and actions, through sharing information, by getting involved with community projects, by being a part of the shift in action, not just in the internalisation of what's going on.
Right. So you would say actually how we do what we do politically is very important. It's not just the end game, it's also the process.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of people within the Truth and Freedom Network who want an end to government completely. And as much as that might be an ideal, because after all, we don't want any rulers, we don't need it, we need community sovereignty, we need individual sovereignty, we need an educated and informed people, and empowered people, and authentic people who can manage their affairs themselves. But that's not what we've got. So to completely wipe government off the face of the earth right now is what I would say a ridiculous notion. That's an unrealistic notion. And this is, I guess, part of the anarchist movement, where anarchy at its core, its etymology, sort of means that no rulers, right? And I'm sure most of us would agree that we don't want any rulers, but unfortunately we don't have an empowered, authentic society. We've got a very ignorant and sick society on so many different levels. And that's not to take away the good work that so many people are doing, both individually and collectively. But at the end of the day, the masses do need a huge re-education process. The system needs to be evolved to the point where we don't need, for example, a government, a centralised apparatus to control things. We don't need that ultimately. But for the time being, it's important that we infiltrate these sorts of mechanisms that we have to achieve our goal of sovereignty. Now, there is some amazing people that do work within the government apparatus and within all different disciplines and industries and whatnot. We need those people there. We need those people there ready, who are conscious of the discussion we're having right now, who will be ready to make the right decision when it suddenly faced with such a crucial situation. We don't want mindless robots within these apparatuses, there are a lot of them, there's no doubt about it. We have a very ignorant and apathetic society, and including people who work within these particular institutions, and with lots of greed and selfishness and competing with each other and the whole jealousy and hatred and bitterness and smallness and all that sort of stuff. But it's also important that we consider how we can use these mechanisms again to achieve our goals. Now, it's really important that we look at the political spectrum as something that we can utilise. It's one aspect for how we evolve where we're going. Another quote that comes to mind is Buckminster Fuller, when he said something along the lines of, you don't create change by fighting the existing reality. You create change by making a new model, which makes the old one obsolete. And that's somewhat true, but I don't find that completely accurate whatsoever. Because I've seen plenty of evolution to existing models. I've seen plenty of change occur when it comes to just slight little baby steps. And so as much as it is important to build models that make the old ones obsolete, it's also important to use the existing models to the best of our capacity to achieve what we want. So again, that quote has really had an influence on a lot of people's minds, where I don't think they've really critically sat down and thought about it from a realistic point of view and thought, well, you know, is that really how reality works? And it's not. What we need to do is take both approaches. I'm all about taking a holistic, balanced approach to what we do in own world and within the collective world, to moving towards freedom, because that's where we're going further and further into the control matrix, into the control system at the moment. We are losing our sovereignty. We're losing both on an individual and a community level, and we need to look at that fundamental issue as what we need to address. And how we address it is not just building new models. It is also using the political spectrum, getting new, fresh energy, new people with raised awareness to continue pushing towards the evolution of our, not just our system, but our species too.
Wow, it would be very awesome. And I totally agree with you that there isn't a space at the moment for enlightened anarchy, and that we do have to still have systems in place. So when you are talking about working within the system, how would you recommend people actually do something about this? What sort of ideas do you have on that?
Well, it's very unique to each individual circumstances, right? So if somebody has a history within bureaucracies, maybe that's some sort of angle they'd like to follow. Maybe they'd like to do the opposite because they've learnt a particular series of information that can help them to build the new model. It really is unique, but a unique circumstance for each person. But really, what it comes down to is localizing your energy. In terms of simply just infiltrating and influencing the system itself, we can talk about building abundance on the internal realm later. But simply, when it comes to what action can we take on the ground, there needs to be a component of localizing yourself. I've been writing for international mindfulness and consciousness, I guess, expansion websites for around 5 years or so. And that's been fantastic to be able to share information and help people all around the world. I've reached millions of people with my articles to help them to reconsider, to recalibrate, to reprioritize how they operate. But at the end of the day, I need to get local as well. And that means getting surrounding yourself with people who are very keen to raise their awareness and also contribute back to the community. There's a number of ways you can do it. There's an infinite amount of ways you can do it. I had a question in my recent Facebook post about, focusing on the life forms of Earth, all the other sentient beings, the animals and whatnot. And if is that important to do? And it is. Absolutely it is. That person's sort of calling pathway. Maybe it isn't. Maybe they'll do it and they'll move somewhere else. It's very a fluid situation. The expansion of ourselves and our experience is very fluid, and we have to be adaptive and not rigid, because if we are, then we might lose the effectiveness and the efficiency of what we're doing. So local action community groups, I would suggest two primary areas that are really important are hemp and food. Hemp is really, really important as it can help undermine the systemic controls, such as fuel. We don't need to use oil-based fuels. We can use hemp-based fuels, biofuels. But there's many other plants and stuff that can do that. But if we can create our own energy in that sense, then we're becoming more independent. It also is important for we can get plastics out of it. We can build a hempcrete, which is a form of cement. fiber. There's a whole gamut of amazing products that we can get from hemp, and it's so easy to grow. It's good for land. There's lots of benefits to that, and it helps bring sovereignty to the community. And obviously going on to cannabis itself and the cannabinoids and the other ingredients that can help facilitate healing, that's really important too. For example, we've got an cannabinoid system within our body. And it is designed to, our cells are designed to receive and absorb the healing agents of the cannabinoids. Now, THC is another element which can help with pain and other aspects of it. But if anybody knows permaculture and companion planting, how certain plants help each other or they don't help each other, companion planting is the idea that you plant something next to something else and it can facilitate each other, or it can be one way beneficial either which way, and support itself as part of the ecosystem. Well, the same can be said about cannabis. It's literally our companion plant, and we've used this for eons, forever. And it's only been the last 100 years that it's been suppressed and taken away from us. And as you can see, there's been an increase of disease and other sicknesses, which is part of it. There's also the chemical rich food supply and all the rest of it that we've got. We're completely surrounded by toxic energy and toxic minds, toxic cars, toxic policies, toxic bloody everything, and toxic medicine. So there's a whole series of reasons why we are becoming increasingly sick. Even though we're living longer, we're certainly living less quality lives in terms of philosophy and connection and all those sorts of things. But there is a problem with the illness within society, and that is one reason why. Now, moving on to food programs, I mean, we have chemical, again, abundant food. That's the wrong form of abundance we should be creating for ourselves, right? It is laced with so much toxicity that it's no wonder that people are, again, increasingly getting sick. So if we can look at bringing simple, organic and sustainable food programs to our local communities, such as community gardens, that's one approach, but there's also cooperatives where people can get together and work on the same property to achieve collective goals. You could also take an Ubuntu approach through Michael Challenger's sort of model where you get a shared return of the energy that you put into whatever program it is, in this case food. So there's many approaches to bringing good quality, healthy, nutrition-rich, energetically abundant food to your community. And those two simple approaches can really bring greater sovereignty, not just on the community level, but on the individual level too, because you're really feeling like you're a part of you're an energetic exchange aspect of this raising of vibration, of expansion, of freedom, and really bringing some health and vitality to your life.
Well, I think those Anastasia books, she talks about holding the seeds in your mouth before you plant them so that they actually grow things that are really, the right things for your own body. So that's another idea with how to do your own food.
That's fantastic. I've never actually heard of that. I've never read the Anastasia series, but my partner talks a lot about it, has talked a lot about it. So, yeah, that's fantastic. It reminds me of biodynamic practice, where you plant according to the moon cycles, and we incorporate that. We grow some food, organic food, on a little farm, a little market garden that we've created, where we've decided to plant those seeds, both literally and metaphorically, and spread that goodness, both literally and metaphorically, to our local community. That's just one little project that we've got going to help assist in that physical action, that material injection, so to speak. But yeah, I mean, I think you've just talked about something really important as well, and that is the being conscious of the energetic exchange that we do have with our environment, in terms of how are we meditating in action, what sort of emotional and informational content and constructs are we putting into the grid, the greater grid that we're a part of. And so what it's almost like a form of shamanism. I call it neo-shamanism, where it's not, there's a big description around that, but just to put it simply, to be very, very conscious of the energetic sort of influence and intent you're putting out into the world, as well as what you're attracting as well, and what you need to process, and what you need to heal and grow within yourself, as a reflection of what needs to be healed and growed on in the, you know, the external, so-called external world. So the process of being consciously intelligent on how we're processing all this energy, and I more work with information and concepts, not so-called plant intelligences or other spirit intelligence, so to speak. Many people do it differently. People work with what they would call angels or spirit guides or plant intelligences, or just life form intelligences, whether or not they're self-aware or not. There's many different mediums or angles that people can take when it comes to neo-shamanism. I personally just like to work with the world of ideas, because it's that's just my natural resonance. That's where I feel it's much easier for me to undertake the healing and growth of that information. It's the best. That's the easiest way for me to do what I feel like I need to achieve in that moment, as well as what I don't know what I need to achieve. So there's a beautiful, and that's part of the process of awakening the self. So that's what's one layer of doing the internal work to spread externally. But that's not the only work, as we started this interview off with. There needs to be actual practical, physical action to balance out what we're doing on the inside as well.
So underlying everything that you're talking about, Phil, is the idea of interconnectedness. So perhaps you could just explain a little bit more about the interconnectedness of us all as a human family, and also with nature.
Well, many people struggle with this one, especially when we're in a materialist paradigm. The materialism philosophy has long been debunked by quantum physical concepts and evidence and whatnot, but for some reason, and I think it's a very deliberate reason, that materialism still reigns supreme in mainstream science and academia. There's a lot of people within, scientists and academics who don't believe in materialism, but they're too scared to say anything because, obviously, it jeopardises their careers and whatnot. So, unfortunately, the materialist philosophy, the debunked materialist philosophy, is still being perpetuated, but it is slowly shifting. But the most simplest way to understand interconnection is the interdependence that we have ecologically and also collectively, like within the human consciousness. Without each other, there's no way we would have got to where we are today. We couldn't have done this by ourselves. We need each other to evolve. That's just the way it works. The same goes with the planetary life forms. There is a necessity for each part to play its role so that we can function together as a collective consciousness and a collective energy. Now, some people think of collective consciousness as just humans' collective unconscious or whatnot, and that is true on one layer, but again, I always talk about the many layers of truth. There's many truths. There's not just one truth. We're not just interconnected. We also are individuals. I'm literally an individual in this particular 3D construct. but I'm also connected as an individual within this 3D construct. So I don't like to just say, well, you know, we're just one and that's it. We're one and we're many things. There are many, many truths, including the fact that we are interdependent with life forms on this planet. So that's just a real simple way for somebody who might not understand the connection to start grasping the concept. Now, obviously, if you go further into quantum physics and you look at entanglements and the whole idea of particles being only possibilities until they manifest into a, you know, a particular aspect of experience, and the fact that the particles, you know, can exist in two or more infinite, really infinite places at once. There's this whole holographic, interconnected grid that underlies the classical world. And so far, in the mainstream perspective, the quantum world and the classical world is not married. There's no unifying theory to unite them. And that's because consciousness hasn't been given an effective role in how we conceive reality. And when I say consciousness, I don't mean self-awareness. I mean the fact that we are just aware. I mean, we've never been anything but aware. Our whole experience has always been awareness-based, not material, not matter-based. We only have ever actually had the experience of matter. We're not matter itself. So we can feel that, a hand is solid, and our table is solid, and the phone that I'm talking on is solid. But in a sense, that's illusory when you look at it through the quantum world. But that's another concept that I find slightly frustrating, is that, yes, this world is illusory to some degree, but that doesn't mean it doesn't have an element of truth. It's a real experience. As much as it might be distorted from other more fundamental truths, it still is a truth on its own level. And this is the experience we're having. So when people say, oh, reality is just illusion, and, you know, there's no, it sort of implies that there's no point doing anything about it. No, this is the experience we're having. If we're hungry, we eat. If we're tired, we sleep. If we look at what's going on in our own lives and find things to be toxic and unhealthy, we do something about it. And the same thing applies to the external level as well. So that's where it gets lost a little bit. But anyway, so quantum physically, we can look at the world as an interconnected construct for the scientifically or rational-minded person. And that's something that I am personally, I had to go on a big journey of exploring the scientific or rational angle on my personal experience of synchronicity and symbolism and interconnection. But that helped me to solidify what I was intuitively feeling. And that might be important to people. It's not for some people, it's not. Some people are just really intuitive and just feel it and experience it, and they don't need any rational justification for it. That's their experience, and that's how it's manifesting. And that's beautiful. We're all a little bit unique about how we want to do it. Now, of course, we can look, moving on, ecologically, quantum physically, so on a biological basis, on a physical basis, but then there's also the conceptual basis, the spiritual basis. And we can look at our experience through the patterns and themes that we experience in the immature realm, the experience aspect. And so when I was younger, I noticed a lot of synchronicities and symbolic experiences that just did not fit into the I'm completely separate box. And so I was like, well, hang on, there's meaningful patterns arising. And I went through the process of going, oh, well, let's just say that's a one in a million chance of that occurring. But then it related to something else. It built on that concept. Another synchronicity happened. I'm like, okay, well, let's just call that a billion to one. And then that kept on happening to the point where I went, well, look, it's just infinity to one now. It is now solidly clear that I am connected to what's going on in the world. That's not to say I don't have my own unique vibration, my own unique frequency, We are, as I think I said earlier, we are an instrument of sound in an orchestra of reality. So we are
lovely.
We are definitely playing in an orchestra. It's a beautiful symphony of different frequencies and sounds and vibrations. But we are also our own instrument. We are playing our own frequency. And it's important that we realise that, because we need to look at what's going on with our own instrument and fine-tune it and clean it and do what we need to do to come to the greatest harmony with what with the orchestra that's going on around us. So, yes, we are connected, and I find it's really important to help people understand it through the guise of symbolism, which is basically the first article I wrote. This is why I got into writing in the first place, because I saw a gap in any information around what symbolism was. And when I say that, I don't mean what the shadow ruling class used with their dark magic to hypnotise and brainwash people and move consciousness in particular ways, because that is a very real aspect as well. But symbolism is simply the interconnected information, the meaningful information which manifests as a particular symbol to help us understand where we are and what frequency we're vibrating at and what we're sort of where we are in that moment. So it could be anything. It could be animals. It could be colours. It could be the people that we meet. It could be the random thing that we overhear. It could be what we might call an unfortunate event that occurred. Because it's a ton of, basically everything is symbolism. It's just whether or not we're conscious enough to interpret in a way that fits into the truth of our moment. So, and then synchronicities is just another way of really saying that, I guess. You have really meaningful experiences that you just go, wow, that set me on, thrust me on the path that I need to be on to where I'm going. And so there's many ways where we can experience inner connection, and whether or not we become conscious of that process. If we do become conscious of that process, then we expand our capacity to interpret our symbolisms and synchronicities in a more truthful, effective way.
Wow, you explained that very well. Thank you, Phil. This is Green Planet FM, and I'm interviewing Philip J. Watt from Australia. I think in society we've pushed this individualism very hard. Now, and you also mentioned the shadow ruling class. So I'm going to ask you to talk a little bit about this shadow ruling class that's behind our government. And I wonder if they are part of pushing this whole idea of individualism to stop us working together.
Well, the concept of individualism has been very much distorted, because it's important that we have individual sovereignty. Collectivism, where a lot of the political structure and momentum is focused on collectivism, which is the sacrifice of the individual needs for the group needs. But in fact, we don't need to look at it that way. If we just look at the individual needs, which is sovereignty and natural law, then that inherently means that the group needs are met. Because it's part of natural law, which is really, really important, and the natural law can be summarised really simply, is that do no harm unless in self-defence, and honour your contracts and your all fellow life forms. Have respect for everything else and their sovereignty. That's how you can wrap up the laws of nature. And it's important that we look at it like that. So if we understand that there is a fundamental guide to living life, and that is based around individual sovereignty, then everything wins. Everyone wins. Everyone gets exactly what they deserve, which is their sovereignty. But that's not what we have, right? We're told what to do. We're over-regulated. We've got a nanny state. We've got a whole series of man-made laws, artificial laws, to tell us what to do. And it's an absolute contradiction to what life is meant to be. And so, and again, these laws, are many of which are sort of necessary in a sense, because we don't have an educated population, an informed population, and a population that understands what sovereignty is all about. So there needs to be some sort of guidance to a degree, but let's not forget the majority of these laws have been generated and created to suit the agenda of corporations and this shadow ruling class. So until we re-educate society, it's going to be very difficult just to have this enlightened anarchy that you said before. I thought it was a great way of summarising, because we're not ready for that. This is a process of evolving back into our sovereignty, like a lot of the ancient civilizations and tribal cultures had. We are less civilized in many, many ways when it comes to the way that the philosophy and practice of our ancestors. So the individualism is important, but it's not important at the expense of other individuals. That's where the confusion comes in.
Yes.
Because we should respect our individual sovereignty. We should have a higher value put on the sovereignty of the self. That is absolutely important, because from that very concept comes the sovereignty of everything else. So that's why it's important we look at individualism like that. But certainly, image, materialism, consumerism, all the system is a very toxic way of distracting the individual from, you know, what's important, the priorities of life, not just with the self, but also with what's going on in their community. And it has been very deliberate. If the shadow ruling, the fight for freedom, let me just start here. The fight for freedom is an ancient journey. This is happening not just on a material level, but a multidimensional and a spiritual level as well. This is a fight for sovereignty, which has been happening for a long, long time. And we're, in a sense, we're the most free that we can ever be, we've ever been, in our so-called modern civilized history, at least. Because we have the choice not to be entirely influenced by this toxic realm that's going on out there. I'm bloody free emotionally and philosophically right now. I know the majority of people aren't, and that's because they're still indoctrinated and highly ignorant and apathetic to really doing anything for themselves and their community. But this is really a prime opportunity to create true sovereignty for the self, and then also use that empowerment to help create sovereignty for the community. So this ancient journey of freedom is represented by, right now, on a material level, by a shadow ruling class. And that ruling class, the oligarchy, have taken control of the most important elements of our system. For one, we have a scarcity-based model. We need to move to an abundance-based model. Money in and of itself is scarcity-based, because it means that we have to fight to survive just to get that money to get the goods that we need. So it's a perfect enslavement tool. Money, currency, whatever. It's a great tool of enslavement. And we will eventually get to the point where we don't need money. We will create decentralized systems of abundance-based production. That's what we'll do. And when I say abundance-based, not just for ourselves, but also for animals and the earth itself, and reality at large. Let's put it in the construct of everything. So, because it all reverberates through to the edge of the infinity and back, so to speak. So they have taken control of the money supply. No, money is created out of nothing. It's a big scam. And the profits generated from that money creation goes back to these oligarchs, to the people who create it, not to community programs and social infrastructure and all the rest of it.
So I'm just going to stop you there. Can you just say a little bit more about money being created out of nothing?
Yeah, no worries. So basically, money, if you go to a bank and get a mortgage, say $500,000 mortgage, they just punch numbers in the computer and that money is now created. Even fractional reserve banking, which means it used to have 10% of it, in Australia at least, doesn't apply. They just create that $500,000 out of nothing by punching numbers in the computer. Now, what you do is you pay, say, back $700,000. That $200,000 in interest goes to them, and the $500,000 that they're created gets wiped out. So it gets created and then wiped back out. So that very process needs to be a public utility. The money creation process needs to be a public utility for the benefit of the people and the environment. Simple. We don't need taxes. We don't need all this stuff that the government has, because the governments have been stolen as well. There's a whole gamut of reasons why and how they've been able to do it. But our governments don't represent us. They represent these corporate structures, the multinationals, the banksters, the oligarchs, the shadow ruling class. So, yeah, money creation is the primary process that we need to take back control of. If we do that, then we can deal with so much of our social problems and start moving into an abundance-based model where we can remove money completely. But first, we need to take back the money supply. Same with the banks. The banks need to be owned by us. Simple, community-based banks designed to provide the needs of the local community. That's how it should work. It doesn't. We don't need, you know, old man with pointy shoes making all this money off us whilst we're struggling to get what we need because we're being taxed so heavily and because that money isn't abundant enough to provide all of our needs. So money, banking, huge. And I'm on medicine. And when I say medicine, I mean food as well. They have stolen our medicine through the pharmaceutical monopolies, suppressed things like cannabis and other natural cures and basically tainted the idea of particular substances or plant medicines so that people don't use them. So there are all these natural things that we could be using, and we could do that on a local level, and we could heal and develop ourselves through these processes. We don't need, you know, pharmaceutical monopolies to tell us what we need to do to help heal ourselves. And obviously they're working on a symptom-based model as well, not dealing with the core emotional, psychological and energetic dis-ease that is manifesting as physical dis-ease. So medicine, then of course, is the media. The mainstream media has been corporatized. It's owned by a very select few, the same people, the banksters, the medicine, they create the money. All of that stuff is interconnected. They've completely hijacked all of it. And the media, again, is just a propaganda tool designed to hypnotize people into a particular perspective on whatever it may be. So you will get some truth there, but you're not going to get the big truth that we talk about here. So we need to take back our media as well, and that's what's happening through the independent media and the alternative researchers who are bringing information that is helping to enlighten and empower society further. The other one is obviously management. So not only do they use political puppets, like for example, Australia, we have a ex-Goldman Sachs managing director, Malcolm Turnbull, who runs our country. Now, massive, massive conflict of interest. Insane that we allow this. And he's heavily tied to a pharmaceutical monopoly as well. So we have somebody who represents the toxicity and theft of our system running our country. Unbelievable. We'll need to wake up to this fact and do something about it.
We had a banker running New Zealand until very recently. An American. Trained John Key. He's gone now, but his legacy is still here.
Yeah. And it's very hard because people don't get it. They give them little hooks, little bits of bait and say, here you go, we'll do this. And they go, oh, yeah, that sort of relates to my needs and therefore I like you. But they're not looking at the big picture. People are highly confused. They don't want to face themselves. They don't want to face the truth. They don't want to face the fact that to deal with the problems that they so heavily disagree with, for example, homelessness or poverty or whatever it may be, they have to look deeper into how the system is run and who runs it. So the management factor, they use their political puppets, their lobbyists, they basically have stolen all big macro policy processes and transformed into what suits their agenda. We essentially have a corporatocracy today where the corporations, which are the guises of the oligarch, can dictate the future, the path of humanity. And not only are these elites, I don't even like the word elite, I shouldn't use it, because really they're just people who inherited particular bloodlines and old money and some new money. But these particular people have a connection to what is known as Satanism. And Satanism isn't the worship of Satan. It just means that they think they're gods. They think that they're the god that needs to control humanity, and they don't follow natural law. They don't follow do no harm. They follow I do what I want because I'm a god. That's their basic ideology. And what that means is that they can do whatever they want to people, including children. There is a lot of evidence of deep pedophilic networks within the real deep controls, the shadow matrix controls of this planet. And that is one aspect that we can all unite on. This is why it's really important that we expose this. And the citizen investigation of Pizzagate was a great catalyst for more thought around this and action around this, because you can't sit on the fence when it comes to pedophilia. You either agree that children should be tainted and raped, or you disagree. There's no middle ground with this one. And most people, as much as pedophilia is still a very real problem, as is rape, there's a lot of it all through the classes or layers of society. It's everywhere, but it's not the dominant view. It's not people don't primarily think that pedophilia is okay. In fact, the strong majority of people would say, no, it's not. So if we can expose this to the masses in a more palatable way, so to speak, because it's very difficult to deal with. I myself had the struggle with this one, and most people do. It's hard to look into this darkness and come away from it still feeling full of light. You know, well, I shouldn't say full of light, because we both have the light and dark within us, and that's one way we can heal that darkness, is by facing our own darkness and processing it in a way that's going to be conducive to the health of, you know, on a more universal construct. So there is a lot of darkness and manipulation and domination and control that comes from these particular matrix controllers. Right, and as hard as it may be for some people to face, the ultimate result is the sickness and toxicity we have today. So, and my latest post, which you mentioned prior to the interview, was basically saying, like, even if they did have humanity's best interests at heart, just have a look at the result. They've clearly failed. You know, we need to do something ourselves. We need to look after our own individual sovereignty and our own community sovereignty. Simple. That's the process we've got to take. If we don't do it, well, then we're going to continue into the depths of darkness, into this transhumanistic technocracy that we're heading towards, instead of abundance and vitality and love and, you know, a bit of peace and a bit more balance to the darkness, which has been pretty dominant over the course of humanity's history.
Yes, it's a hard one when you haven't got a media that is exposing what needs to be exposed. I mean, we're just a small media here, but we need the media to get this sort of information out, and yet it's all been sold.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who are moving towards independent media, thankfully, but then even, you know, it's been really controlled, like, through mechanisms like Facebook and YouTube. If you're already sort of aware of certain things, you'll get that in your feed. If you're not, you won't. If for example, on Facebook, if you like a post related to, you know, whatever, banksterism, then you're probably going to get information around that. And that algorithm is specifically designed to keep the information to a certain demographic, which is those who are aware of it, compared to those who don't. So not only is the independent media has done a great job, although I believe that they could unite better to bring about a bit more credibility to what we're doing. But in all, we've done a really good job of bringing the information which aligns more to the truth to the world at large. So we are moving in the right direction in many ways. There's this whole idea that people are waking up, and it is true, but there are also many people who are going further into the depths of sleep, of nightmare land, and they're doing it because they're fighting the fact that they're being energetically forced to wake up. There is an energetic or vibrational aspect to this awakening, and everybody feels it, no matter if you're in the depths of darkness or, you know, you're in the depths of the control system in terms of the oligarchy, or if you just, you know, drove by on the street. We're all feeling it on some level. It just depends on how conscious we are of and how connected we are to the self and to what's happening within us. So those who are really really don't want to deal with it will fight it and go further into the darkness. So there are a lot of people going that way, but there are also a lot of people moving into more of a aware-based approach to life. Now, there are also many people on the fence. There's a lot of people who get, you know, the political corruption or, you know, the money supply issue or whatever it may be. They get some of the systemic stuff, but they don't get the spiritual stuff, bringing love and abundance to self and sharing that with the community and understanding our intimate inner connection and everything. You know, there's a huge value and benefit to processing experience as it is, let alone what you can do with that. So, but then, you know, I'm really surprised. Like, I have been really surprised where I just tend to, in my movements through, you know, society, I'll just drop truth bomb, matter of fact. A truth bomb, matter of fact. Truth bomb, matter of fact. And just tell it like it is with a nice smile and maybe with a little joke mixed in. And I'm really surprised at the response I get sometimes where you might not think that that person might be not be aware, and they are, and that's brilliant. And I've had to sort of have raised my, I guess, not expectation, but my belief in that they're already awake. They just either don't know it yet or they do, because you'd be surprised at how many people are starting to get this information, and they are on a tipping point within themselves, or they've just gone over it. And they're ready, willing, and able to learn. So, but the one thing that I need to emphasise, I really need to hit this home, is that, again, we don't ever wake up. We only become conscious or we wake up around certain things. And it is a never-ending journey of consciousness expansion, of energetic expansion. We don't get to some point where we know everything and, you know, that's it. You know, I'm the guru and everybody listen to me. That's a load of bull crap. We all have a unique power within us to share the information that the frequency that we're at, but we also can absorb greater knowledge and truth around where we're at as well. It'll always happen, whether or not it's delivered by a person or an animal or an experience or whatever it may be. There's always a capacity for us to expand ourselves. And if we all look at ourselves that way, then we see each other equally. We are all on the same team. We might be at different levels of development, but we're all on the same team of expansion. And then there's no need to condemn people for their views or be a hypocrite by, you know, saying you should be more awake or whatever it may be. We can just go, we're at our level, our own unique level. Let's not compare. Let's just cooperate to bring this sovereignty that we need to our own lives and everybody else's.
Well, Phil, I just love the idea of people going around and dropping truth bombs, because, you know, if you just go through and you state your truth, because I think that's what people are a bit afraid of, particularly actually in New Zealand. People are a little bit afraid of actually standing for their truth, saying who they really are, because they don't want to offend anybody. But if you just go out there and drop a truth bomb, and if it doesn't go down well, you're not attached to the outcome, but you might have just triggered something in somebody's mind, then it's a really good way to, well, awaken, to build awareness. I like that word, awareness, of course, with having the awareness party. Phil, we have about two or three more minutes. Have you got anything else that you'd really like to tell us? Because, I mean, you've just filled this entire interview with so many important things that I shall really enjoy listening to it again. Any last words?
Yeah, let me just elaborate on what you said then, because I think that's important. That, you know, we live in a politically correct society, very overly politically correct, and that's been designed on purpose. That is deliberate, because it keeps people from telling the truth. Now, not only do the scientists and academics and other people who work in certain disciplines feel fear of telling their own truth because it affects their jobs, that's a brilliant strategy for keeping people's mouths shut. But it's also people who feel with their friends and family that they're going to be condemned or rejected, which they will be by some people. At the end of the day, if you think or feel in a certain way, and that is not understood by certain people around you, And people, let's face it, people have a capacity to hate, but they don't understand. So if there is a fear of being rejected, but who cares? Like, it might be hard to deal with the fact that that person doesn't like you because you've got a particular view in life, but don't you want to go and surround yourself with people who will support you no matter what anyway? So it's, I think the fear of... Because we don't have a connection to the self, right? There's a high lack of people connecting with them, truly connecting themselves, understanding their lives, understanding their hypocrisies, understanding their truths, understanding who they really are. And that means that if you're not connected to the self, then you're searching for it through other people. And you want to feel loved, right? Like, you know, I love the old cliche, how can you love, you know, another person if you don't love yourself? It is so true. That one's a brilliant one because it is true. You've got to love the self. You've got to connect with the self to connect with others. So if you lose a few people through the process of connecting to the self and standing into your own truth, well, then so be it. Suck it up. That's what's meant to happen. And when it comes to people in society in general, I find it so free. I'm very free. When I talk to the baker about how education is indoctrination, I'm so free when I walk up to a local council representative and say, this is what the truth is. And if you want any credibility in your role, then you need to deal with it. I feel so free when I look at myself and go, Phil, that was hypocritical. It was not real for who you are. You need to face that and evolve it. I'm not scared of it. Nobody should be. It's important to face ourselves and move through the process of our own evolution as authentically and genuinely as possible.
I have to stop you there, very sadly. Phil, this has been an amazing interview. Thank you so much. You have just been listening to Lisa Eyre interviewing Philip J. Watt from Australia on Green Planet FM. Join us at the same time next week, 8 a.m. Thursdays, or anytime online at greenplanetfm.com. This interview is sponsored by The Awareness Party. You can find us at theawarenessparty.com. And you can find Philip Watt at themindunleashed.com, themindunleashed.com, and also vitalityguidance.com.
Thank you for tuning into this Green Planet radio show. I trust you have derived both enjoyment and insight as we empower ourselves with a greater understanding of the magnificent, multifaceted world that we inhabit. In these coming times of rapid change, it's going to take raw courage and inner resolve. And so I thank you as we all remain both focused yet relaxed as we challenge the status quo and let go of the old as we energetically co-create the new paradigm. Because I can assure you, every one of you are important now. When you go to bed tonight, ready for well-earned rest and sleep, realize that what you think, feel, and do is part of your unfolding destiny. And when we commit to a higher act of goodwill and or community service, Providence also lines up. So that every conversation we have, every email we send, every phone call we make, and every meeting we attend, that we stand in our power and communicate intelligently, warmly, with integrity, knowing that we are actively shaping a collective future that will benefit all our children and grandchildren, as well as that of a larger community. This is Tim Lynch in Auckland from Nuclear Free New Zealand, and mobilizing unity consciousness, wishing you a stupendous week of heartfelt success. I say bye-bye and hari ra. This show was a repeat program.